first, it's time to Boris Dance with Ian Dunt. And Ian, it's been a couple of weeks since you and I chatted, and as Harold Wilson says, a week in is a long time in politics. A fortnight, therefore, is probably twice as long.
Yeah, well, we've had at least five or six constitutional crises since I last talked to you, so we go at quite a pace nowadays.
Can you run past a few of them? Oh, let's start with Podium Gate, though, might we?
Oh, wow, yeah, that was extraordinary. So the Prime Minister goes off to Luxembourg as part of this tour, mostly theatre, really, of pretending, you know, he's got this fantastic deal and the Europeans are going to negotiate it with him. He won't show anyone the deal. He repeatedly says, you know, if I actually show it to someone, then it will get leaked and then other people will know about it. So this sort of Schrodinger's deal, which both simultaneously exists and cannot be seen, is carted around Europe and it goes to Luxembourg. In Luxembourg, he is met, as is basically now just tradition, by a group of protesters shouting at him, in this case mostly British Remainers who live there. This happens almost everywhere he goes. I mean, I haven't seen him get out of a car without being shouted at by protesters basically since he became Prime Minister. And so at that point, Downing Street says to the Luxembourg guys, look, we were going to have this joint press conference outside, but we're a bit worried that if we do that, the TV cameras are going to pick up the fact that everyone's screaming, Boris, you're a liar, off to the side. So can you move it inside? The Luxembourg team says, well, we don't actually have time to do that. You told us this with minutes to spare. And we don't have any rooms in which we can fit the journalists to do it. So we're just going to go ahead and do it. And at that point, Boris Johnson basically scarpers. He just runs away, leaving the Luxembourg Prime Minister to stand by an empty podium, basically tub of larding him. There's an old British Have I Got News For You episode from when I was a kid where a politician refused to appear, so they replaced him with a tub of lard. And it's now become the metaphor for if you just go ahead and do it with the empty seat. So he tub of larded him and just stood there pointing out the problems with the Brexit policy to an empty podium beside him. Now, that would have been embarrassing at the best of times, but as you sort of highlighted earlier, it's even more embarrassing given that just 2 days before that, Boris Johnson had claimed that he was the Incredible Hulk and therefore would put up with any kind of fear, which left us all sat there thinking, I wonder if I missed the episode of the Incredible Hulk when a bunch of 75 protesters were enough to scare him away.
The madder Hulk gets, the stronger Hulk gets, he said.
Yeah, exactly. Although, of course, because he had disappeared, he looked much more like the Invisible Woman. Then, wonderfully enough, I mean, this podium was just behind it. There was this sort of shrub. Now, there's a meme on Twitter that you may have seen of, you know, Homer Simpson disappearing into a shrub whenever he gets sort of embarrassed. And of course, the second that that image came out, people started putting the Homer Simpson figure disappearing into the shrub behind him onto it. So look, another diplomatic moment for Boris Johnson and another catastrophic moment of despair for sort of British reputation.
And then a megastar from the EU Parliament branded Johnson the Incredible Sulk.
Yes. I mean, look, as soon as he did, I've got to say, the Incredible Hulk thing has been very painful indeed, because it's led to sort of every newspaper, you know, doing these cut-ups of imposing Boris Johnson's face on the Incredible Hulk. A video came out yesterday showing Jeremy Corbyn as Thor. All of it is just so profoundly preposterous and leaves us with this, it's sort of the degeneration of the manner in which these things are discussed. Because, of course, underneath all of this stuff, there are actually policy questions to be addressed. There is the insanely detailed and technical problem of his attempts to try and put no customs border on Ireland while still having a separate customs territory. And he has weeks to do it. And instead, what we mostly get is a bunch of people superimposing his face onto the Hulk while he runs away from press conferences.
Ian, Lady Hale, the most senior judge in the UK, says that the case surrounding Boris Johnson's suspension of Parliament raises, and I quote, a serious and difficult question of law. That must be causing a chill to run up and down the Johnson spine.
Yeah, so, I mean, we're in the middle of this case now. It's ongoing as we speak, and we'll probably get a ruling tomorrow afternoon. It's in the Supreme Court. There's 11 justices there listening to the case. Yesterday was sort of a moment of high legal drama. And this is about as dramatic as constitutional sort of affairs are ever going to get in this country. They're almost impenetrable, the judges. It's very hard to try and get an impression of where they're going with things. I mean, they're obviously poking away at the arguments on either side to try and reach a judgment. And the case is very, very complicated indeed. If it goes against Johnson, and I mean, a few weeks ago, I didn't really hear almost any respectable lawyers saying that actually this is the kind of thing that could succeed. But things have really changed, especially since last week in Scotland, it ruled against Boris Johnson's attempt to suspend Parliament. So it really could go either way. It's in quite a jangle. If it does go against the Prime Minister, he will be forced by the courts to bring back Parliament, which is, you know, beyond unprecedented. I mean,
so the Supremes could
never dreamed it would
say. The Supremes could overrule the government.
Oh, absolutely, they can. Yeah. So, I mean, the case that's being put forward at the moment by the supremely named Lord Panic against Lord Panic, by the way, is against his name, an extremely calm individual, almost sort of glacially calm, which has been putting against the government is it has several elements to it. The first is on justiciability, which is basically, is there any way for courts to have a role in this process? Is it their place to do it? And that's the hardest part for him to win. An English court said that they didn't. A Scottish court said that they did. That's the toughest part, where he has to say, look, this is still your area. This isn't just politics. You have a right to rule on whether the rule of law is being followed in the way that politics is conducted. And that is a separate question to the manner in which politics is conducted.
One fears that Trump from time to time would simply ignore any constitutional limitations on his behaviour. Might Boris, in fact, give the Supreme Court the finger if it rules against him?
I don't think he's going to be able to. I mean, he's certainly following the Trump playbook on this stuff. I mean, the mere fact he suspended Parliament is completely unheard of. And, you know, most constitutional experts, most lawyers, most academics are completely aghast by it. He also suggested at one point, when rebel MPs passed a piece of legislation forcing him to extend Article 50 at the end of October, he suggested he would just ignore the law. But when they do this, they're getting serious pushback. They're getting it from the judiciary. They're getting it from civil servants. They're getting it from parts of the media, but influential parts of the media, and they're getting it from public opinion. So he's finding himself with very few actual avenues to do that. If he was to say, look, I'm not going to bring back Parliament, even though the Supreme Court, you know, there is no higher legal authority in this country than the Supreme Court, was doing that, essentially what you'd be looking at is a coup. I mean, that has to be the word that you would use in that scenario. And judges, which gives you an idea of just how little trust they have in government at the moment, were asking the government lawyer that precise question. He's called Lord Keen, because apparently the entire case needs to be constructed with people with the most absurd surnames. And he isn't very keen. He's quite the opposite. But,
stop it.
And again, they were sort of going, well, look, if we find against, you know, are you absolutely certain the Prime Minister is going to go this way? In any other scenario, it would be insane to see senior judges asking whether the Prime Minister would follow the law. But they were reduced to asking it. And the answer they got was, yes, of course. So although he'd like to follow the Trump playbook, he's not really finding it that it's possible for him to do so.
Well, I suppose on the one hand, Buckingham Palace beckons. He can go back and sort of rearrange the furniture with the Queen, or he might be sent to the Tower.
Yeah, indeed, because that is exactly what we are talking about if the Supreme Court finds against him. Remember that to suspend Parliament, Boris Johnson had to go to the Queen, I mean, through his emissary, Jacob Rees-Mogg, and say, well, look, we're asking you to suspend Parliament. That's a relatively normal procedure if this was being done for normal reasons rather than to silence Parliament. If the Supreme Court finds that actually that was unlawful, that was improper, what that means tacitly, implicitly, but absolutely the case, is that Boris Johnson lied to the Queen. Now, you know, in Britain, it's one thing to lie to Parliament. It's one thing to lie to the public. But lying to the Queen is about as terrible a taboo as you could possibly break. Now, if he was found to have done that, it is just extraordinary to think that you would have a prime minister in that situation. But if they find against him, that is precisely what it will mean.
It must be an immensely trying time for HM.
Yeah, so there are rumours that, all rumours is all you ever get from the palace. I mean, they're very good at stopping this sort of stuff. And she's obviously studiously neutral in the manner that she comes across. There are rumours that she's completely outraged by this stuff. Because even when she accepted the prorogation request, which she had to, the prorogation is the cancellation of Parliament, the suspension. which she had to do. I mean, you know, constitutionally, she's not a real person in that way. You know, she's a mechanism. And she, if the prime minister comes up to it, you kind of have to do it. But when she did it, something incredible happened. The protesters, who are usually in Westminster, took a short walk, sort of up Whitehall, along the Mall, and suddenly they were outside of the palace. Now that, again, is completely unheard of. You do not see protesters there because there's nothing to protest against. The Queen is not political. But suddenly she was just being dragged into this area of politics where people were demanding she stand up for Parliament. She refused the Prime Minister's request. And just that little step, relatively minor in the grand scheme of things, is by distance the most politicised that we've seen the monarchy become, certainly in my lifetime. This is a dangerous, dangerous moment for her, and she'll be desperately hoping that it stops here.
We know that when the Queen is in residence, the flag flutters at the palace at the moment. I guess it must be inching down the pole. Britain's best legal minds battle over constitutional complexities in Parliament. What has Her Majesty's opposition been up to, please, Ian?
They are continuing their glacial slide into something like an articulatable Brexit policy. In the current formulation, I mean, it takes about 12 hours to explain the thing. In their current formulation, it is that if they win power in a general election, which we're expecting, you know, before the end of the year, probably, they would renegotiate the deal with Brussels and then hold a referendum on the deal. So they've given Remainers what they want, and they've given it to them because during the European elections, Remainers left Labour, sick up with their sort of mercurial absence of policy from them on this issue, and went, well, fine, if you're not going to give it to us, then we'll vote for someone else. That scared Labour enough to go, fine, we have to give them the referendum. However, Jeremy Corbyn this morning is now saying, I can't really say which way I'll campaign in that referendum. You know,
you're kidding.
Maybe I'll campaign for the deal. Maybe I'll campaign for Remain. Who knows? We're not able to tell just yet.
Doesn't he have to tell the Labour's conference in Brighton what he's going to do? Isn't it on this very weekend?
It is on this very weekend, and he will tell them that this is the plan. I mean, for a start, he hasn't actually said this, by the way. It's that classic thing with Corbyn, where the absence of words matters more than the presence of words. And the absence is that he's just not saying which way he would campaign. So from that, you deduce the fact that he means that he's going to stay neutral. But again, we don't really know. I have to say, this is probably not as, I mean, a lot of people are quite outraged by this, but I don't find it too strange. He was in a difficult position, right? Because, I mean, it's completely logically consistent to say, I'm going to try and get a new deal and I'll give you a referendum on that deal. However, if you twist that slightly, you get into a very weird position where you're saying, I will negotiate a deal that I am then going to campaign against in a referendum. And that's quite absurd. So he manages to sidestep that. The other issue is he's, you know, you don't necessarily really want him on the Remain side. He's not very popular at the moment. There's no guarantee that he would help it. He campaigned for Remain in a very lukewarm way in 2016. It certainly did no good then. So it doesn't feel that there's a major loss. And what this really comes down to is the fact that Labour for so long took Remainers for granted, thinking there's nowhere else that they could go. So it could afford to have this, you know, studied ambiguity about the way that it presented itself on Brexit. And finally, Remainers just thought, now, you know what? I don't trust you. I'm not going to do this. So now, whatever they really get from Corbyn, and what he's given them now is what Remainers were saying they wanted for the last 3 years from him. But even when he gives it to them, they think, I just don't trust you. And there's other parties like the Lib Dems who are very much talking my language, and I think I'll give them my vote instead.
Okay, let's talk the Lib Dems. We've only got a minute and a half left, Ian, but tell me what's happening with them.
They held their party conference over this weekend, and they got a new leader, Jo Swinson, who's about 39 years old, quite impressive, but quite tribal as well. She has now shifted their policy to the much tougher, saying, no, there's no need for another referendum. If we win power, we will revoke Article 50 and stop Brexit. Now, there's lots of interesting democratic sort of repercussions to that. But what's telling is she's going for the Remain equivalent of no deal. What no deal says to people on the Brexit side is just press this button, it will all be over. What revoke says on the other side is, look, we can all make this stop as well. Nice and simple, no more need for a referendum. And that's really where the competition is, trying to secure that Remain vote, which is now highly motivated, highly politicised, and wants clean, easy answers to the problem.
You're far too young to remember Tony Blair, but he was a British Prime Minister. And I saw him on the telly the other day. He is now so appalled by what Boris is up to, he's even contemplating voting Labour.
Yeah, he's always been a bit weird about which way he's going to go on this stuff. He obviously hates COVID so much. He hates Brexit. The guy looks like he is, well, he has a face of complete despair. And it's easy to recognise because it's the face that almost anyone with any rationality or basic moral decency has had while looking at British politics for the last 3 years.
Got a bail. Thanks for that, Ian. Ian Dunt is editor of politics.co.uk.